From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. In a 2015 ranking for cities in North Carolina with a population of 10,000 or more, Wilmington was second after Asheville for crashes. For every 1 minute a freeway lane is blocked due to a crash incident, it results in 4 minutes of travel time delay. About 30% of all crashes are secondary crashes caused after the initial crash, possibly due to a sudden stop or distracted driving. Or looking at the crash. That's according to Jesse Leonard, Division Traffic Engineer for the North Carolina Department of Transportation. How often do you drive from one end of town to the other without getting frustrated or noticeably delayed? Do you consider yourself a fairly even-tempered person but have bouts of road rage more than you care to admit? Do you commute between Brunswick and New Hanover counties and deal with those traffic complexities as planners work to accommodate the rapid growth? If you answered yes to any of those questions, then this discussion is for you. Today, we're going to learn from a couple of engineers from the DOT and the City of Wilmington how local expansion and improvement projects are going, what's on the horizon, and maybe why you always seem to reach the intersection when the light turns red. We'll also spend considerable time on your traffic questions today, so start thinking about that head-scratcher that you've always wanted answered by an expert. Now's your chance. With us today to answer your questions are Karen Collette, Division Engineer for Division 3 of the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Karen Collette, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
And we also have Dennis Volkanowicz, Signal System Management Engineer for the City of Wilmington. Dennis Volkanowicz, welcome to the program.
Nice to see you.
And you can send your questions about traffic in the Cape Fear region to coastline@whqr.org. You can also call us today at 910-343-1138. Karen Collette, thousands of people navigate the Leland Causeway every day. That's this stretch of road one encounters after the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge on the Brunswick County side. What is the ultimate goal of this construction project? What's happening there and how is it going time-wise?
It will be connecting, of course, Leland and the Wilmington side with an extra lane. And so, especially coming from Wilmington into Leland, that third lane will be free-flowing. So if you're going to Leland, you don't have to merge or get into another lane. That's going to help, but the completion of I-140 is the solution for a lot of the traffic on the causeway.
And what will the completion of I-140 do? Can you describe geographically sort of where that's going to go?
Well, of course, it picks up at 421, where it now is dead-ended. It'll go over the Cape Fear River, and then it will come on the other side of Leland and join it. To 7476. And then that will complete all the way into Brunswick County. And so I could paint a picture, but everybody listening to your radio show that has to drive that knows how much traffic is just coming through the tourist and everything going to the beaches. All of that should be going on the I-140, which will be extremely helpful for the causeway traffic.
Okay. And there actually at one point, I think when that construction first started, how long ago was that? A couple of years ago?
About 2 years.
And there was a Facebook page that was created, a Leland traffic group, that to sort of warn one another about what you can expect that particular day. Are you part of that group? Is that still up and running? Do you talk to people that way?
I felt like I had to get in that group. And I'm tagged to answer questions and things of that nature as well.
And you're willing to do that?
Absolutely. I believe if people knew... A lot of people knew the backstory and what we have to deal with. They would probably make the same decisions we do. So I think when I'm on there, it's very well received. They just want to be informed and know what's going on.
That's exactly right. And we'll get to an email in a few minutes from a woman who was trying to travel that stretch of road earlier this week. And I think a lot of people actually ran into some snags there. But Dennis Volkanowicz, you work for the City of Wilmington as a signal system management engineer. What is the source? What is the largest source of complaints for you? What do you, when you talk to the public, what do you hear the most?
Other than the general, why is it so congested here? I would say about 75% of my phone calls are in the ballpark of this signal is not changing for me. And after we have the conversation and describe how a traffic signal works, that you're supposed to stop behind the stop bar, all of these very minuscule components really affect on how that traffic signal operates. And once I describe that, on occasion I'll get a return phone call or a return email the next day saying, thank you so much for explaining that to me. I didn't realize how much of an effect that was.
We were talking just before the show, and you both are engineers, and we remarked on the fact that you started out your career as an engineer probably never imagining you'd have to become a human relations expert.
No, thank goodness I'm talkative and have some social skills because the further along I got, the more that's much needed.
Dennis Vulcanowicz, so how does a traffic signal work? When someone pulls up to a red light, and we're talking right now about within the city of Wilmington, is that light supposed to turn green? What's supposed to happen there?
Well, there's a series of timers that get implemented once a vehicle pulls up on the side street. If there's nobody else around on the road, say in the middle of the night, there can be up to about a 15-second delay where the signal is actually trying to recognize, okay, is there really a vehicle present? Once that is identified and it's clear for the signal to transition on the main line from yellow and then red and provide green, all of that happens. It gets a whole lot more complicated during the day when there are vehicles everywhere. Every traffic signal in North Carolina is designed the same. Some intersections are more complicated than others where it could just be two minor roads crossing. We call that a simple two-phase intersection. It's my turn, then it's your turn, and then it's my turn, and then it's your turn. Well, when we get these larger intersections like Market Street and Eastwood Road where there's left turn arrows in every direction, it's my turn, then it's their turn, then it's their turn, then it's their turn. So you have to wait for the signal to cycle around, and it takes a little while for it to get back to you. Everybody wants service immediately. So what we do is we try and program the signals to operate similar. Every intersection is designed to operate very efficiently all by itself, but when you start putting very small intersections beside very large intersections, and you have to kind of force them to do the same thing, run the same timers. You know, be green on the main street for 60 seconds here. Well, if I'm green for 60 seconds here, I need to be green for 60 seconds down here too, so that all the traffic that gets started at the first signal can progress through the second signal.
So when you're talking about an intersection that's as heavily traveled as Market Street and Eastwood Road, if I pull up to the intersection when the light is turning red, how long will I probably have to wait? Does the timing change based on the time of the day or based on whether it's a weekday or a weekend?
Absolutely. We monitor traffic patterns and traffic volumes. Those detectors that are in the road that tell the signal when a vehicle is present are collecting how many times a vehicle goes over those loops. So we have a pretty good general idea of how much traffic volume is out there, and we have to match the timings to those volumes. Well, that volume changes throughout the day. At 6 o'clock in the morning, there's not a lot of traffic, but by 6:30, 6:45, it's starting to pick up. So I don't want to use the term we turn on the signals, but we put them in a mode, in a coordinated mode, so that they can start working together once there's enough traffic there to try and move.
Is this a fairly predictable kind of rotation, or is this something that you have to monitor every single day because there are so many variables?
There are a lot of variables, and we do monitor it every day, but traffic in general is very predictable. A predominant number of people go to work in the morning, take a lunch hour, come home in the evening. So we have these very general guidelines, say from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., we call the morning peak. You know, there's an 11:30 to 1:30 lunch peak, and then the p.m. peak, or the evening commute time from 4 or 4:30 till 6 or 6:30, depending on where you are. And then the times between those we also have to account for. So across the city, we try and get all of the signals working together for the at least the major time periods.
And you mentioned the stop bar. For people who don't know what that is, and this is, you must get a lot of calls from people who say, yeah, it's not reading my car, or your system is broken because it doesn't detect when I'm there. What do you say to them?
I say that there is a there's a 2 foot wide white line painted all the way across your lane of travel as you approach an intersection. That's the stop bar. We get a lot of, I'll say, confused drivers where we have a pedestrian crosswalk just ahead of that stop bar where there's also some white paint marks. A lot of drivers will pull into that pedestrian crosswalk, maybe thinking that they've stopped in the right place. Maybe they weren't quite paying attention and they just stopped too far ahead. But if all drivers stopped behind those stop bars, the first large white bar that they encounter, there'd be a much better opportunity to get green at the signal.
So the detection system will actually pick up the vehicle when it's behind that stop bar. And if you pull too far ahead, it doesn't see you? Is that how it works?
It thinks you pulled up and just kept going.
Went through the intersection, so you're not there anymore.
Correct.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about traffic in southeastern North Carolina, why it gets hung up, what improvements are in the works, and why it might look simpler when you're not a traffic engineer. If you have a question about traffic congestion, roadway improvements, or a traffic pet peeve you'd like to get off your chest, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And when we come back from the break, we'll get to some of those emails. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking about vehicular traffic in southeastern North Carolina, and we have two experts with us to answer your questions. Dennis Volkanowicz is a signal system management engineer for the City of Wilmington. Karen Collette is the division engineer for Division 3 of the North Carolina Department of Transportation. The phone lines are open, however, they're almost full, so you maybe try later in the show, 910-343-1138, or send an email to coastline@whqr.org, and I promised we'd start getting to emails in this segment. Barbara from Leland writes, on Monday, and that's this Monday, I left my home, which is 2.5 miles south of Highway 7476 on 133, headed north on 133 toward Wilmington. This trip can take as little as 10 minutes, or it can take considerably longer. We left home 30 minutes ahead of an appointment. We're stopped by standstill traffic. With no explanation, the traffic was at a near standstill about a mile from our home. Took 55 minutes for us to travel that 2.5 miles. At that point, we abandoned the idea of continuing to Wilmington. And she's asking, why doesn't DOT make public service announcements to tell us about these jams before we get stuck in stationary traffic? Why don't they have personnel on site to direct traffic at the bottleneck and ease those backups? In many areas, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, for one, there are always highway patrol or other officers on site in such situations trying to lessen congestion. My car burned gas and produced emissions for 45 unnecessary minutes. She's very frustrated. So cutting to the chase, she's asking, who is coordinating all this? How can we be informed about slowdowns, lane closures, new traffic patterns, accidents, bridge closures? Look forward to intelligent, creative solutions. They're out there somewhere. Karen Collette. So first of all, there are a lot of questions in there. Number one, what happened on Monday that caused all that backup on the Brunswick County side of the bridge?
Well, there are so many backups sometimes. I don't know what particular one, what happened Monday, but usually it's accidents.
I think this one was related to an inspection on the bridge. That
that was happening Monday.
Okay.
The Cape Fear Memorial Bridge.
Correct. That was a planned inspection. It's like every year or every other year. And when they go over time, then it's a federal requirement. And so it's never a good time to inspect bridges in this part, especially during the summer. What we're trying to do is to get those, even though they're annual inspections, after this year, because they have to meet those federal requirements. I'm asking for all the bridge inspections, Cape Fear Memorial, Isabel Holmes, Brunswick River, all those bridges, plus every beach bridge, to not be inspected between Easter and Labor Day for the mandatory inspections. Now,
we're
they
talking
may have
about
to close it for repairs, but
if something popped up. So you're talking about the tourist season in the summer. Let's not have inspections going on during that time.
Absolutely.
Now, there's an electronic sign that is on, I think, Highway 74, 76, that can tell motorists. Of course, she wouldn't have been able to see that sign. She was on 133.
Right.
But does DOT put up notices saying, hey, we have something going on, the left lane is closed, or how does that work?
We do have those overhead signs that we use for emergencies or for some type of traffic delays, but they happen so frequently that keeping a handle on that is difficult. And if you have a sign that you are continually writing the same message on, sometimes it's not heeded. But I heard she was asking about law enforcement helping with the merge. They tried that near the first of the project. The local Leland police would come out and try to direct traffic, and it created more backups. I mean, even that, everybody said, well, when somebody sees them, somebody's slamming on brakes, and then somebody's running into the back of them. And so they found that traffic flowed, and there were less accidents when the law enforcement was not present during that time.
She's also talking about this standstill traffic on 133 and how motorists in that kind of situation could get information about what's happening. She, in her case, she gave up and just turned around and went home.
The Leland, I know this sounds interesting, but that Leland traffic page, they are posting every time there's an accident. Somebody's had it posted. And even a lot of people ask, what's it look like? And there's always somebody on the causeway to report that. It might be as much up to date as any other.
So can you tell us what that, this is a Facebook page. What is it called? The Leland Traffic Group or something like that. If people searched Leland Traffic on Facebook, it would come up.
I think it's close to that. I forget the exact title. But it was created just for the commuters and to find out what is going on the causeway and traffic about Leland.
Okay. And we will post that on our website, too, when we post this at the end of the show. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about traffic in the Cape Fear region, what projects are underway, what causes congestion, and maybe what motorists can do to help alleviate some of that. We have Nelson from Duplin County. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. No, this isn't Nelson. This is Derek. Derek from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I do have a compliment, actually, for Karen's crew. I ride the roads quite a bit, and I always see the beautiful flowers there on MLK, the Porter's Neck area. And I just wanted to say that sometimes in that gridlock, you can observe the beautiful landscape. And then I see the yellow trucks, I believe it is, out there. And I just wanted to compliment on that. So that was my spot.
That's great. Thank you so much, Derek. How often do you hear things like that, Karen?
That was awesome. I'm smiling. I don't know if you can tell on the radio. Thank you.
And now we have Nelson from Duplin County. Welcome to Coastline, Nelson. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, when is the estimated completion time for I-140 where it actually comes in to 17 down in Brunswick County? And is there, once I know when that's finished, when is it, do they have any plans to extend it to the South Carolina line so that 17 is a limited access like an interstate is?
Karen Collette.
The estimated completion date for the I-140 is November of 2017. Now, that is to be driving on it. The actual contract goes through the summer of 2018, but that's because of environmental permitting things. When people get two different dates, I just like for them to be clear, we are hoping to have traffic on that by November of 2013. There's also the Carolina Bays Expressway is what he might be talking about. They are doing a feasibility study and trying to figure out what the best route would be to have a controlled access that goes from Brunswick County into South Carolina. So that is underway.
And why is that being looked at? Can you explain what happens on 17 when people are headed towards Myrtle Beach?
It's very well, it's needed. And a lot of people take, I think Hickman Road is like a back road. When you can travel a two-lane road faster than you can travel a four-lane divided, there's an issue.
Nelson, thank you so much for that call. We have an email from Tom Erickson of the Transplanted Garden, and he says, with the impending shutdown of the Carolina Beach Road 3rd Street Corridor, this is in Wilmington, for a scheduled 9 months, have any other alternative routes been considered beyond using Shipyard to 17th Street? That corridor is already busy in the morning and afternoon hours. Dennis Volkanowicz.
Well, from my understanding on that project is it will be a two-phased project. I believe that travel will be permitted during the entire project from Front Street onto Carolina Beach Road. They will maintain traffic northbound and southbound from Carolina Beach to Front Street. I just want to make that clear. Third Street will be blocked at some point, and there will be an alternate route. I'm assuming the signage would be the Dawson-Wooster corridor to 17th Street to Shipyard would be the detour around there. It's going to be an impact to travel. I can't deny that. I'm glad that we are going to maintain traffic, and once the project's completed, it'll be much improved. There'll be two lanes in the southbound direction, and it'll maintain the same access in the northbound direction.
And he's saying this is scheduled for 9 months. Is that correct? Do you expect this to be about a 9 month long project?
Karen,
it's a 9 month contract. Okay. It is.
Mm-hmm. What do you do when projects go over their scheduled time frame? Which, as we know, happens. There are lots of variables. What are the variables, and how do you keep a handle on your contractors, Karen Collette?
Well, let's take that example down there at 3rd Street. It is a 9 month contract, but we have to calculate some weather time in there. I mean, for instance, if you have a job you know is going to take 10-hour days, you can't, if you say 10 hours and then they get rained out or something, you have to have a little float time in the contracts. But we have inspectors there that are trained, and every day, among their other jobs, they do a project diary, who showed up, what they did, how long it took them. At the end of that contract, if they run over, we can go back through those diaries and be able to justify what we call liquidated damages. So they pay, unless there's some justification to warrant that extension, they pay a certain price per day for every day that they're over that contract time.
And what would be a justified reason for a delay?
Well, one thing, weather delays have to be more than 40%. If you got 100 days, they have to have 41 days before they can even ask about weather extensions. There have been times where they have had to pull off for an emergency work that maybe we asked them to do, something of that nature. Or they could claim that supplemental agreements, extra work added to the contract, justify an extension of the contract time.
And continuing with Tom's question, he says, what about repaving the crumbling section of South Front Street to Greenfield Street and turning it into, this is a unique proposal, turning it into a one-way in the morning into town and one-way out of town in the afternoon? Is that, Dennis Volkanowicz, something that a municipality would ever consider, or would that be too confusing?
I think that would be something that needed to be studied thoroughly. There is still a lot of southbound traffic in the evenings approaching that intersection. Rerouting those folks over to 3rd Street to come down, there's lots of alternatives. That's an interesting idea.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about traffic in the Cape Fear region. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have Tom from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a local question and I have a state question. The local question is MLK running between town and the beach. Carr and College have, this is evening rush hour, we were talking about this earlier, a very, very short light if you're on MLK. I would say, I'm guessing, 7 to 9 seconds, and maybe your expert can prove me wrong, but essentially it's a very, very short window to get through that light, which seems to me it encourages, although it may help flow, it encourages people rushing through that light and therefore encourages accidents. That's my local question.
Okay, well,
let's
take that first. Dennis Volkanowicz, can you talk about the timing of some of these intersections on MLK?
I don't know the specific timings without having my computer with me, but I will say that MLK Parkway at the Kurt Avenue intersection receives most of the time. If we say it's a 2.5 minute cycle, I would imagine MLK gets about at least a minute of that. That's another one of those very complicated intersections where there's left turns in every direction. So,
is that complicated also because some of those roads crossing MLK are also major roads like College and
Kerr Avenue is, I would consider, a major road. That's a major commuter route in this area. College Road is even more complicated because I understand there are a lot of people traveling MLK Parkway, but I can assure you there's twice as many people traveling College Road. So that's where my job gets it's very frustrating for myself because I know MLK needs time, but College Road needs more. And I can't create time. There's only 60 seconds in a minute.
Right.
So I have to divvy up those 60 seconds in some fashion. It's one of those things where you know it's the peak hour. You just have to try your best to assign it as fairly as possible. I would say that MLK does get more than 7 to 9 seconds in the evening, though, even crossing College Road. I think it's in the ballpark of 20 to 25 seconds. So.
And Tom from Wilmington, you said you had a state question also.
I did. I understand that 3rd Street downtown is a state road, and I just would love to hear from your guests from the state as to what, if anything, can be done to try to lower speeds. It becomes a speedway at virtually any time of the day in a residential area.
Which part of 3rd Street are you talking about specifically?
3rd Street, let's say, from the north end of downtown all the way to Castle and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Karen Collette?
Well, I'd have to look into that. Normally, we work very closely with the municipalities on speed limit
This is a 35-mile-per-hour stretch of road, if I'm correct. Dennis, you're nodding.
Yes.
Are there speed issues in this part of the... I mean, are people regularly exceeding that 35-mile-per-hour speed limit?
I can't say they're not. I don't sit out there and do speed enforcements, but I do know that from Market Street North to the MLK or to the Isabel Holmes Bridge, or actually to Front Street, is a city street now, with the exception of the new bridge that was just reopened. And south of Market Street is the state-maintained roadway.
Tom, thank you so much for those good questions. We have Danny from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline, Danny. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just like to say I've had the opportunity to drive in other countries and other parts of this country where instead of complex light systems, they utilize traffic circles, and it seems to move things more efficiently. My question is, are there any plans to remove some lights in town and replace them with traffic circles? I can take my answer off the air.
Thank you so much, Danny. Good question. And in some of the newer developments up around Mayfair, we've seen traffic circles employed. Is that right, Dennis?
They are becoming more prevalent in this area. The 2014 transportation bond that passed in the city of Wilmington has proposed a couple of traffic signals being replaced with roundabouts.
We have an email from George who writes, Oleander in College Road was already a bottleneck. Yet, and Dennis, this is officially the busiest intersection in Wilmington, isn't it? So we had to get to this. Yet, a Trader Joe's was allowed to open in the middle of the bottleneck. Do we care about traffic problems or do we care about developers? How would you respond to George? And either Dennis or Karen.
I don't think there's anything we can do immediately to that intersection to fix the volume of traffic that's trying to pass through. I do know with the Trader Joe's development, some access limitations were requested and they were implemented. You can only turn right in and right out off of College Road. I can't answer, you know, anything more than that.
Karen Collette.
Well, the DOT, we do manage access to our system, and we have to give access to people who own property unless it's control access. And I think one issue that people would really prefer to talk about is land use and who permits either in the city or the county when they vote to permit that land use for that piece of land. We have to provide, DOT has to provide the safest access possible for them.
We have a question from Joe. He asks, why is there no left turn signal at Market and 23rd heading north? And that's also in the city of Wilmington. Dennis Volkanowicz.
Typically, to add a left turn protected portion of the signal, left turn arrow for that matter, there would have to be a certain number of left turning movements opposing a certain number of opposing movements, you know, going toward town. That intersection, you know, it would require a 16-hour traffic count to get these numbers. It could be analyzed.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about traffic congestion and how planners are managing the explosive growth in the Cape Fear region. After this 90-second break, we return for the final segment. The phone number to call to ask your question is 910-343-1138. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we have Karen Collette from NCDOT, where she's a division engineer for Division 3. We also have signal system management engineer Dennis Volkanowicz, who works for the city of Wilmington. We're picking their brains about traffic flow today, driver problems, what's on the horizon to handle the growth. You have a few minutes left to ask your question. The number to call is 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. And Greg writes, pet peeve, stoplight that stops traffic when there isn't anyone waiting at the light to cross through. If we must be controlled by a traffic light, make it an intelligent light. If it stops traffic, make it stop for a reason. Dennis, what would you say to Greg?
Well, I'm assuming Greg is on what we would call the main street on whatever intersection he's trying to pass through. The detectors that we were talking about previously, the loops that are buried in the asphalt, they're an electrical piece of equipment that sits out in the weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. They do fail. Anytime construction in the area is occurring, sometimes these loops get damaged. So the fail-safe for those loops are to always think there's a vehicle waiting to access the main road from the side street. So in that event, I would encourage anybody to call either NCDOT or the City of Wilmington and say that they experienced that situation, and we'll make sure to repair that loop as soon as possible.
Veronica from Leland, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Forgive me, I'm on a cell phone.
That's okay. We can hear you.
Great. I used to live in Seattle, and I realized that going up and down of drawbridges is maritime law. But Seattle seemed to have an exception to policy where you didn't open the bridges during rush hour. And I know that I'm a logistician. I know about transportation and getting goods and services where they need to go. But it's a little frustrating when you're sitting on the causeway watching a sailboat go through at 8 o'clock in the morning where people are trying to get to work or, God forbid, trying to get an ambulance across to New Hanover Regional Medical Center. Is that something we should be looking at in the future?
Karen Collette.
We talked to the National Guard. That is a maritime issue. She's correct. And commercial vessels do have the right-of-way. What I've also heard a complaint is that there are pleasure boats that will fall in behind or allow themselves to go through at the same time as the commercial, and it's sort of kind of like cheating if you're sitting there watching it. But that happens. But commercial vehicles do get priority.
So if a very tall private vessel wants to come through during rush hour, typically you're saying that the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge would not go up for that vessel. Is that what you're saying?
Not pleasure boats. They're timed. Mm-hmm. But a barge is getting through. And I had a conversation with a lady one day. I said, I wouldn't want to play chicken with a barge or a train or an airplane. You know, we think as cars are the top part of that chain, but we're actually below those other three.
Veronica, thank you so much for your call. We don't have Reed anymore from Bladen County. We have Shane from Jacksonville. Welcome to Coastline, Shane. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. What's your question?
My question is the old Walmart in Jacksonville, the main intersection there, the traffic lights are grossly misplaced. In the left turn lane, one of the lights, both those lights look like they're going over the straight lane. So when they turn green, I've watched several times people go through that light thinking they're supposed to go straight because it turns green, when in fact it was the left arrow that turned green. And then the straight lights are actually placed over a parking lot to the right of it. It looks like it's going into the hotel that's sitting there. I'm wondering if that would ever be changed.
Well, thank you for bringing that to our attention. I will be glad to look into that. I've made notes.
Thank you so much for your call, Shane. We have an email. This person writes, I heard that DOT bought all the properties around where Military Cutoff ends at Market Street so they can install a giant cloverleaf intersection. Ogden will have lost all of what's left of its former character at that point. Is that something that's happening?
I'm sorry, Collette? Which intersection was it?
This person is saying Military Cutoff where it ends at Market Street.
Oh, yes. We have started and are in the middle of getting right-of-way for the Military Cutoff Extension Project, which will continue Military Cutoff all the way to I-140.
And there are other projects that you are going to find out in December whether those are funded as part of the Strategic Transportation Initiative. Can you tell us briefly, Karen Collette, what the STI is and how that works? I know it's complicated, but there are some variables involved there and an interesting point system.
Well, it was enacted from HB 817 back in 2013. And at that time, we were looking at $15 billion worth of transportation improvement over the next 10 years. And they divide that out into three categories: state, regional, and division. And so the statewide funds get about 40% or $6 billion of those dollars over the next 10 years. The regional impact is about 30% of the funds, which is $4.5 billion. And then division is another 30% or another $4.5 billion. So that $15 billion over the next 10 years is what we have to work with to complete projects.
And what are some of the things that you're hoping will get funded, that you'll find out about in December?
Quite a few studies on interchange designs, for instance, Military Cutoff in Eastwood, MLK in Market, MLK in 132, College in Oleander. There's one to be studied at Monkey Junction. There's a lot of intersection improvements that are listed first year in STI.
Let's take that College and Oleander intersection for a second, since it's officially the busiest intersection
Correct.
In the city of Wilmington. What kinds of design changes could be made to that intersection? What will you be looking at that could make a qualitative difference there?
Well, we don't have notice to proceed to study it yet, but if it's anything like Military Cutoff and Eastwood, which is right below it as far as accident rates and things of that nature, we looked at clover designs quadrant designs, which are nothing overhead. That's what an alternative. The other alternatives have either Eastwood or military cutoff going over the other road, so it's an overpass. We've studied things like a tight urban design, spillways and echelons, and we're trying to get through that analysis. And the same thing will happen at College in Oleander. There will be several alternatives. The level of service, how long that design will last under traffic, when that level of service is supposed to, I call it break, but, you know, become non-functional. Because obviously, usually the more life you get out of that, the more expensive the project is. So we'll do economic analysis on all of those alternatives and work very closely with the Wilmington MPO and the county to get through that process and pick the right design.
We have several emails from Ryan, who may be familiar to you, Dennis, because I think he's communicated with you before and sent a spreadsheet analyzing red lights and when they happen. It's impressive. You invited him to your office, Dennis, to sort of take a look at the data that you have available. But he says, you try to get all the traffic lights across the city working together, especially during the busy hours. But how is it you can get stuck at every other light if they're working together? And I'm sure this is a question many people have in Wilmington.
You know, I looked at the data Ryan put together. And in his email, he mentioned that, you know, he travels at multiple different times of the day. So it's, to me, from my standpoint, it's not a same thing. I leave at 7:30 every day and this is what I experience. It's very hard for me to kind of pinpoint and troubleshoot this issue if it's 7:30 this day, 9 o'clock this day, you know, 12:30 this day. Like we talked about earlier, these traffic signals are doing different things at different times of the day. He could be arriving at a time when the signal is transitioning from the midday peak plan to the afternoon plan. And in that transition time period, you know, the signal kind of, it has to adjust itself. So it may not run exactly as designed from the first plan to the second plan. We just have to let it go through its calculations to get where it needs to be. So then every cycle after that, everything will be coordinated again.
When people do encounter congestion every single day at a certain spot in the city, is that how much of that is because the roads just aren't built to handle that volume of traffic?
There is definitely a breaking point that, you know, a single travel lane can only carry, I'm thinking it's in the range of 13,000 to 15,000 vehicles per day. That's if there's no traffic signal at all, if it's just a lane going down the middle of the country. So we're talking about very close to those volumes here on our major arteries on four lanes of traffic with, you know, 13,000 vehicles in each lane, and there's traffic signals. So from my standpoint, we know there's going to be delay. We can't avoid it. Everybody needs to get where they're going. We're trying to reduce that time frame of the delay. If we can shave 10 minutes of that peak hour delay that people experience, if it's only busy from 7:30 until 8:30 instead of 7:30 till 9, we've made a huge improvement in traffic. And, you know, we calculate delay based on every vehicle that approaches an intersection. So we're not only calculating the people we're trying to progress, but also the people that are waiting on the side streets trying to cross that road.
So we've been talking a lot about what you guys can do at the DOT and the City of Wilmington to improve congestion. Is there anything that drivers can do? Earlier in this discussion, we talked about stopping behind the stop bar so that the traffic light senses the vehicles there. But are there other things that drivers consistently do? And Dennis, you have a wall of monitors in your office, so you see people all the time. What are common mistakes that drivers make that add to the congestion?
I don't know if it's mistakes, but I think everybody needs to fall back on the safe driving behaviors. You know, two hands on the wheel. Don't use your cell phone. Don't exceed the speed limit. The signals are timed based on either the speed limit or just the operating speed of that roadway. So if you speed up from one, if you exceed the speed limit, there's a very good chance you're going to stop at the next intersection because you're not in that, we call it a green band of where we think vehicles should be as they travel down the road.
So it won't work. I won't get ahead of the red lights if I try to accelerate just before it turns.
I cannot tell you how many times I have just held the speed because I took that class in college because I used to speed every one of them. But you maintain that speed, and people fly by you and then slam on brakes and have to stop, and I just keep right on going because it changes for me. And so that the speed limit, especially if you have synchronized systems, that's what you should be driving if you want to get through there faster.
We have an email from Carol who writes, Pender County traffic traveling to and from Wilmington on Route 17 can be heavy at certain times of the day and seasonally. Accidents, road maintenance can cause jams. Residents in both Pender and New Hanover counties have been attending DOT and Wilmington traffic study meetings for years. The one comment that seemed to be echoed by residents at these meetings was no more streetlights. The Hampstead Bypass Plan was created as a way to alleviate the congestion. As the Hampstead Bypass is currently unfunded and the Super Street will involve millions of dollars to construct, is there any master plan among all of the proposals out there? Karen,
well,
Collette.
We would love to see the Hampstead Bypass, of course. I think that's the ultimate answer. But in the meantime, if we want to get traffic flowing more safely and cut down on commuter time, we will have to do the improvements such as a Super Street or Medium project so that we can cut down on the conflict points and accidents, because accidents are what back the traffic up so bad. Another thing that we tried to push or ask about during the causeway in the beginning was alternate work schedules, flexible work hours. As anybody will tell you on that causeway, 10 minutes lead time makes a huge difference. So if you can go to work a half hour early, that's one vehicle off the road.
So you're saying if people could think about staggered travel time so that everybody's not hitting the road at the same time.
Absolutely. And they'll tell you on certain days it's worse because, you know, of where the traffic's coming from. But there are other days that it's not quite so bad. And so it's not the roadway. It's that capacity issue.
Linda writes, has there been any thought given to the problem of people on cell phones looking down at their laps, taking forever to realize traffic is moving? I have to say, I see that on the highway all the time, people looking at cell phones. That's a different issue. But Dennis Volkanowicz, is there anything the city of Wilmington can do?
I mean, it's a troublesome topic. Everybody feels like they need to be so connected all of the time. Like I said before, good, smart driving behaviors will reduce accidents. I know there's a no don't text while drive law out there, but to enforce that law is very difficult. But that's the only answer. You know, your eyes need to be on the road. You need to aim high when steering. If it's red, if the signal is red ahead, why speed up to it? Why not just coast up to it? Maybe it'll turn green by the time you get there.
And Brent writes, can anything be done about people that drive straight through the turning lanes on College Road? Talking about the area between UNCW and the Market Street ramp, people drive straight through these right turn only lanes. Not only is it dangerous, but 3 weeks ago, while traffic was stopped for the geese to cross, someone drove straight through across the intersection and killed several of them and sped off.
That section of roadway is scheduled to be resurfaced this fall. We're trying to work through some situations where maybe the pavement markings can be improved a little bit. It won't stop until there's a physical barrier, such as a curb bump out, but we can try and improve the situation.
Well, that's this edition of Coastline. Dennis Volkanowicz and Karen Collette, it's been a pleasure having both of you on today. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Coastline is now back on a Wednesday-only schedule for a couple of months. In September, we fire up the Thursday Coastline once again in time for political coverage. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from the iTunes Store. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.